we'll come back to Shattering Myths. I'd wanted to go to the lies that were promoted by Paul, but before we go there, I do want to finish the conversation with Larry, who I like a lot. Larry is my good friend. We share.
We may not agree on everything, but we disagree on everything. It's no big deal.
Larry.
Yeah.
When you confront the religious on your site, An Inconvenient Truth. And you tell the religious, you give the religious a logical, rational, well-informed explanation for whatever point they have made that is erroneous, and they are still willing to cling to the error.
Yeah.
What's your response?
Well, I walk away.
Yeah. So you just told me that your concern over and belief in chemtrails is that on some days you look up in the sky and you're by an airport and there's no condensation trails, but that was the one that you gave, and that other days you look up and there's crisscross of patchwork of chemtrails, and mm-hmm. I explained to you why on some days they would be de minimis and why some days they would be significant. It has all to do with the temperature at altitude. There is nothing else to it.
You know,
the warm air that comes out of the back end of a jet engine will hold more moisture than the cool air surrounding that warm air that has just been ejected from the back of the jet engine. And because the warm air will hold more water moisture, you get the condensation trails that appear behind jets at altitude, and that is the entirety of it. There is nothing more to it. There is nothing more to it than that. The U.S. government is absolutely not putting poison into Jet A so that airplanes of both a military and commercial nature can spew out poison through these jets. It isn't true. You know that even the companies that make those jet engines, which in this world, the leading producer is General Electric, the second leading producer would be Pratt & Whitney. Everything that goes through a jet engine is analyzed. The jets now are all made with automatic reporting systems. Mm-hmm. If there is contamination in the fuel, it's immediately reported to the manufacturers that are responsible for maintaining those engines. It isn't true.
I didn't even call to talk about that.
I know.
I have no interest in it. I really don't.
Okay. Good.
I've been through this with other people that attack you for it, and I say, you know, Yada and I agree on the important issues, and that's what I care about.
Yeah.
The reason
I'll bring up a conspiracy theory like chemtrails is because the internet is a very integrating, associating mechanism, and we use the internet, both of us, to communicate. The internet is how people listen to this program. Oh. Both on the archives and live. The internet is how people read all of the books that have brought us together. YadaYah.com, IntroToGod.org, QuestioningPaul.com. It's the internet, Prophet of Doom, .net. All of those have been distributed on the internet. And when there are associations between conspiracy theory and what I've devoted the last 10 years of my life to conveying, it diminishes the credibility of what is being conveyed.
Yeah,
because conspiracy theory.
Bring it up. I gave you my word a while back.
So that's the reason why I'm should I have kidded you to say, you know, because I know that Jesuits are your least favorite mechanism.
Well, they're up to no good.
We're in agreement there. The Jesuits are up to no good. From my view, they're a small player in a whole host of things that are up to no good. But we're in agreement that they're no good. They don't have near the power they used to. That's correct. And so I wanted to kid you about the chemtrails, because I had thought that was one conspiracy theory you had not bought into. But you and I reached an agreement, and we reached this agreement about 6 months ago when I first began
defend you when people attack you on a personal level because of something you don't believe. That's the only time I bring it up. And, in fact, just to let you know, said, boy, that's a bold statement. I said, maybe he's got a low IQ, huh?
Yeah.
You know, and I left it at that. Because it's, it comes to the point where, somebody has a disagreement with whatever, and I know you think that this is ridiculous in this case, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Don't sit and tell me I'm ignorant, and don't tell me that Yada is ignorant. I know better.
That's why we came to an accommodation about 6 months ago. First of all, in any relationship, you can choose to emphasize that which separates or emphasize that which unites. We have a common cause that is hugely important to both of us, which is
what governments do or don't do in order to take the rest of us down.
That is important to me, and I spend an hour or 2 hours every day, 5 days a week talking about it. And
expose their lies.
Right. I expose their lies. I expose what they're doing that is in the news, that is knowable, that they're doing that is hostile to our interest in both religious institutions, academic institutions, military institution, political institution, all of them, and that's what we spend a considerable time doing.
It's not like you're sitting out there voting for these guys doing it.
No. Yeah,
we're not doing it either.
Right. Yeah.
I don't even understand what the big issue is. I'm not enabling them. I'm not part of it. You're not part of it.
No.
And we're on the same page
there.
I don't know
what
all little things they do,
right.
But none of them are probably any good. I know they're into.
Are there certain things that the U.S. government is doing that are deliberately hostile to our interest and that they're trying to keep secret? Absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely.
For example, the NSA was deliberately hostile to our interest, and the U.S. government wanted to keep it secret. There are a number of things. The CIA did tests on people and gave them mind-altering drugs. The U.S. government has given African-American soldiers venereal disease. Our government has done many
experimented on orphans.
Absolutely. I mean, there is no question that it's done some despicable things, and many of those despicable things are now available for us to condemn them for doing. We don't have to make any extrapolations.
And you and I would both agree that the consolidation of power, ruling over people, is a bad thing.
And that's why God wants us to walk away from it.
Right.
He doesn't want us to associate with human institutions. So it's important to expose and condemn the malfeasance in government and military. Right. Now, the reason I don't go into conspiracy, though, is not because I don't know a fair amount about it. I bet that I have read more about the roots of conspiracy than probably any advocate of conspiracy that you've encountered. I'd put my money on that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got right here on my desk Abe Burles, the Memoirs and the History of Jacobinism. It is the foremost volume on the essence of conspiracy theory. I'll bet you that there aren't 10% of those who advance conspiracy theories that have studied, I mean, really read it over and over again to understand.
I'd say who, there's less than 1%. But
yeah, who Adam Weishaupt was. Yeah, who Adam, I mean, I know exactly who Adam Weishaupt is. I know what he wrote. I know what he did. I know why he did it. I know how he did it. And then to read Roberson's analysis of the same material. My guess is that maybe 1% of those who advocate conspiracy theories even know who he is. I'll bet there's not 1 in 1,000 that know of Quigley. And Quigley's analysis, which is more influential on modern day government officials that you would put into the conspiracy box, like Bill Clinton, for example. Quigley is extraordinarily influential. Quigley just came out and said, "Yeah, it's true. There is an agenda, and there are some people that are part of it." So I've read Quigley. I've studied him. I've read all of the books that were written to demonstrate how America built the enemy that we fought not only in Vietnam but in Germany, and how Americans conspired against their own country.
I've told people 100 times that you're not an advocate of big government, so what would it matter since you're four square and opposed to it, and I'm four square and opposed to it, and apparently they're four square and opposed to it. What difference does it make? What little nuance here and there?
Now, here's the thing.
It makes people look stupid.
Yeah, I think that when people advance conspiracy theories around, for example, the famous Building 7 at the World Trade Center, or chemtrails is the new thing, or HAARP there up in Alaska, and when they build elaborate conspiracy theories about these things, or they get fixated on the Bilderbergers or the Council on Foreign Relations, that what happens is that they enter a zone where for the vast preponderance of people that might otherwise be interested in what they have to say, if they can present evidence and reason in a compelling way, that their credibility is just utterly destroyed.
Well, yeah, and some it works the opposite way too. I don't.
But it only works the opposite way with about 3% of the population that are prone to believe them, and 97% of the population. It works against, and that's why I've asked, and you've done a marvelous job, and I'm really pleased, proud, happy, supportive of Larry, because you have done a marvelous job to keep it from influencing what we're about here. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're about ready to transition into what Yahweh had to say about Shaul, Paul. I just have one other comment. It's actually by way of a question, Larry. There is a group of people. In America, I think that the polls say that it's about 3 to 5% of Americans are conspiracy theorists. There is a group of people in the world, large group. In fact, there's 1.5 billion of them worldwide, where a poll's taken of them when they're asked their opinions, somewhere around 95% are conspiracy theorists. What group of people do you think conspiracy theory resonates with 95% of the adherents?
That I don't know.
I actually know this because as you said, most of the conclusions that I come to, I don't come to by way of opinion or impression, but by research. The group of people in the world that have the highest propensity to believe and promote conspiracy are Muslims. Almost everything in the Muslim world is a conspiracy. Polio vaccinations are a conspiracy of Christians to kill and convert Muslim boys. 9/11 was a conspiracy of the Israeli Mossad to cause the West to attack Muslims. Almost everything in the Islamic world is presented as a conspiracy. So it happens to be 95% of Muslims are advocates of conspiracy theory. Don't know if that's meaningful. I mean, it's a meaningful correlation. It doesn't necessarily
go anywhere. I would say 95% of Americans wave the flag, and that's pretty stupid. But you know, I mean, yeah that's true. Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, whatever. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Matter. I know one thing. Let me ask you this. Do you trust big government and world leaders in the UN to do what's in your best interest? Are they going to promote world peace and harmony and love and prosperity? And let me answer that for you, Yada. No.
No. No. You know, that's why I began today this program on the
page.
There is a conspiracy. There are many, actually, conspiracies that I do promote. The conspiracy of climate change, actually the conspiracy of global warming, as a man-made problem that is principally caused by man and that can be solved by man. It is a conspiracy that is specifically designed to control people and to fleece them.
Give us money and we'll regulate the heat of the sun.
That's right. Yeah, the war on terror is a conspiracy. There is no war on terror. There's no individual known as terror. There's no doctrine known as terror. You can't have a war on a tactic. It is a means to control people, to restrict their freedoms, and to fleece them.
And to invade other countries and to do whatever, gold, oil.
Yes, whatever the reasons may be. I don't think that the war on terrorism was ever fought for oil, but so that's not one of the theories that I buy into.
There are some
examples of where we have invaded countries based upon our thirst for oil. An example, we invaded Afghanistan primarily because we could not negotiate the kind of deal that we wanted with the Taliban to get them to authorize a pipeline down western Afghanistan to take the oil and gas from the Caucasus region and the Caspian Sea to a free water port. And so we thought that if we invaded, we would have the personnel there that could protect the roads and the pipeline as it was being built, tried to do so, failed in doing so. And so there's a wonderful book written about it called Crude Politics that will talk about the real motivations for invading Afghanistan. So, you know, on occasion we have invaded on behalf of
Libya. He wouldn't join the World Bank. He wanted a gold currency, and he nationalized his oil. And that was it. Those were his sins. I mean,
Saudi Arabia nationalized their oil, and so did Kuwait, and so did all the countries on the postage stamp fiefdoms of the United Arab Emirates. They all nationalized their oil, and we embraced them. We gave them huge military arsenals so that they could protect their freedom. Yeah, they do. They were major purchasers of U.S. Treasury bills. They're not even doing that, by the way, anymore. So there's issues in that regard. Hey, after the break, let's actually go back and review Yahweh's testimony in Chabaouk. 666 years before Paul would write his letter to the Galatians, telling us that Yahweh could not be trusted to honor the responsibilities that he had offered those who accepted the requirements of his covenant, annulling the requirements of the covenant. Yahweh wrote these words about that same individual, Paul. Upon my requirements and my responsibilities, I have decided that I will literally and continually stand, and I choose to always stand and present myself upon that which protects and fortifies. So then I will be on the lookout to see what he third person, singular, masculine, will say about me, observing how he, third person, singular, masculine, will question me. And then how can I be expected to change my attitude, my thinking, and my response concerning my disapproving rebuke? Then Yahweh answered, approaching me, and he said, write this revelation and then expound upon it and reiterate it using letters upon writing tablets so that by reciting this, he, third person, singular, masculine, might run and go away. Still, indeed, this revelation from God is for the Moed appointed meeting times. The Moed appointed meeting times that are predicted in the Genesis account during the fourth day of creation, when the greater light would become visible as a sign for the Moed, became manifest in our world when, in the fourth millennia of human history, after being expelled from the garden, Yahusha came into Jerusalem 4 days before Passover and then fulfilled, as promised, Pesach, Matzah, Bekudim, and Shavua. All in the right order, all on the right day, all in year 4000 Yah, which was 33 CE. This revelation is for that time. It provides a witness and speaks, pouring out evidence in the end, which entraps. Who does it entrap? Trap. That lone masculine individual. What is the evidence against? It's against that one lone masculine individual. The extended period of time required for this question to be resolved, exactly 666 years, shall not prove it false. Expect him, third person, singular, masculine, in this regard. Because indeed, he will absolutely come, neither being delayed nor lingering. He is going to come as the Moed Mikre are fulfilled. That occurred in 33 CE. Pay attention. He will be puffed up with false pride. Paul was amongst the most arrogant men who ever lived. His soul, it's not right in him, nor is it straightforward in him. In other words, he's going to use circular reasoning. He's not straightforward. So then, through trust and reliance, by being firmly established and upheld by that which is dependable and truthful, those who are righteous and vindicated shall live. What God is saying here is that this guy that's going to use a means that is not right and not straightforward to fool people, the antidote, the defense against that, is to come to know and understand who Yahweh is and what he's offering, understand his requirements and responsibilities so that you can trust in him and rely on them, being firmly established by the God who said that he is going to literally and consistently stand upon them and therefore embrace, accept that which is dependable and truthful. Because it is by those requirements and through those responsibilities that we are made righteous and that we are vindicated so that we can live. It is through these Moed, these first four of them that were fulfilled in 33 CE by Yahweh through Yahusha, that makes us vindicated, innocent, makes us immortal. That's what he's speaking about. The antidote for Pauline doctrine. Moreover, because of the intoxicating and inebriating spirit of the man, of deceptive infidelity. Deception was Paul's tool. He would take what God said, just like the Muslim man the other day, out of context, misquote him, truncate what he said, and then use it to imply the opposite of what is true. That is the ultimate in deception. That's not creating a deception by a completely different approach. It's corrupting the true approach. It's not creating an entirely new God. It's corrupting and twisting the truth about the one real God to create a false impression in a false way. That's what's deceptive about it. What makes it infidelity is that God is interested in a monogamous covenant relationship. He said that if you've got any other God, any God that is made up, you can't exist in it. And Paul was making up gods, the God of grace, and his characterization of Yahusha is modeled after Dionysus. It's treacherous betrayal, he says. Why is it betrayal? It wouldn't be betrayal unless you were at least somehow associated with the message that Yahweh was trying to convey. Otherwise, it wouldn't be betrayal. It would just be treachery. But betrayal, it's betrayal because Paul was a Israelite. He claimed to be one of the apostles. He claimed to be superior to Yahusha's disciples. That's what made it treacherous and betrayal. Paul presented himself as a high-minded individual, but God calls him a high-minded moral failure. And is arrogant with meritless presumptions. And God says that he will not find rest. He will not find peace. He will not live. Whoever is open to the broad path, the duplicitous and improper way associated with Shaul. The broad path associated with Shaul is Christianity. The duplicitous and improper way associated with Shaul is Pauline doctrine, whereby the Torah is annulled, whereby the covenant is replaced. That is the improper way. That is duplicitous. That is the broad path that became Christianity. Shaul authored half of the Christian New Testament. He is the founder of the Christian religion. God is telling you that Paul's writings are duplicitous and improper. And he's saying that those who accept them will never find rest, will never find peace, nor will they live. He and his soul, he, third person, masculine, singular, and his soul, he's talking about an individual named Shaul, Paul, are like the plague of death. That's why. There will be no peace, no life, no rest in what he has to say. Paul's lethal. According to God, he and his soul are like the plague of death. And so those who are brought together by him, accepting him, will never be satisfied. That would be every Christian who goes to a Bible study or goes to church and listens to a presentation or sermon from one of Paul's letters. If you go to a church, you're being brought together by him. Not by Jesus. There was no Jesus. And the Christian Jesus has nothing in common with the real Yahusha. Those who are brought together by him are Christians. Those who accept him are Christians. And Yahweh has said they will never be satisfied. Most every Gentile will gather together unto him. All of the people from different races and nations. That was Paul's claim. Paul had three overwhelmingly important issues. One is that he claimed that he alone had the rights to all Gentiles, and that the rest of the disciples could only speak to Jews. Oh, that wasn't true. But that was his claim, and he made it over and over and over again. So when Yahweh tells you that this is a poison that is ingested wholesale by Gentiles, he knows what he's talking about. The second, of course, was the annulling of Yahweh's Torah and its covenant. And the third was his personal crusade against crucifixion, which was the sign of the covenant. Paul's name means question him, and God says they do not ask questions, any of them, about him. Boy, when you question Paul, then people like the program director at Kaya, wherever that station might be, say, I know I would never have a show on where somebody questions the author of Ephesians and said that he was a liar. No, I would never allow that. That's what happens. If you question Paul, Christians will call you the Antichrist. They will say that you're demonic. They will say you're not saved, that you're representing Satan. They're afraid to question him. It says they do not ask questions, any of them, about him. Terse references to the word, they lift up his taunts to ridicule, along with elusive sayings, simplistic and contrived equivalencies, and mocking interpretations, controlling through comparison, counterfeit, and cliches, along with derisive words arrogantly conveyed. It's the essence of the propagandists who promote Pauline doctrine. Taunts, ridicules, elusive sayings. Yes, when someone actually, who is not part of them, part of the Christian church, asks them questions about Paul, their response is terse references to the word. Yeah, they'll make a citation, but they'll take it and twist it and take it out of context and mistranslate it. Terse meaning truncated references to the word. They lift up as a taunt. Not to understand. They have no interest in understanding. Their interest is to promote their myth. And they do it in a way that to ridicule someone who is trying to tell them the truth. Along with elusive sayings. You know, sayings that can be believed, but they can't be known or understood. A kind of saying that will appeal to those who are impressionable, to those who would embrace faith. They're always simplistic and contrived equivalencies. Simplistic. Now, I'm going to tell you that the overall message God's presenting is pretty simple. He's dad. He has a covenant. He has a Torah that guides us to the covenant by way of his seven invitations to meet with him. It's pretty simple. But it's not simplistic. It's consistent, not contrived. And it's equivalencies that get the religious in trouble. You see, nobody that's conceived a religion, of whole cloth that says, okay, I'm going to create a religion, and it's going to be unlike anything anybody else has had. This is my, well, maybe they have. You look at Scientology, although they do call it the Church of Scientology. But, you know, the spacecraft and the volcano and all that. I mean, that's a science fiction writer and pretty gifted in creating something out of folk art. And, of course, Joseph Smith, even he, with his wild, stupid idea that there's a Book of Mormon that was given to the Jews who were really masquerading as Indians and Native people here in the Americas. But even then, he had to corrupt, to give credibility to his crazy story by incorporating swaths of what Yahweh had said. That's what Paul did. That's what Muhammad did. They control through comparison, through counterfeit, through equivalencies. And it's often through cliches. Holding up the sign, John 3:16. There is nobody named John. His name is Yahochanan. And 3:16 is part of an entire discussion that Yahusha has with a religious leader, where the religious leader says, how do I get to be saved? I said, why would you ask me that question? You're a teacher of the Torah. Read the Torah. It explains how you're saved. And so by going through the Torah and telling him what it says, he concludes with that comment, but outside of the context of the discussion, it's meaningless. Just a cliche. And you look at Paul's words, his whole letters, derisive, arrogantly convey this idea that, yeah, that God's testimony is impotent, but God inspired me to tell you there's a whole different way, that he's completely discarded that old way because it won't work. In fact, it was mean. It was pornography, according to Paul. But God gave up, and he asked me to come up with a new plan, which I am now articulating to you. What could be more arrogant, more of a counterfeit, more mocking, more contrived, more taunting and ridiculing? There are hard and perplexing questions that need to be asked of him, and double dealings to be known regarding him. And so they should say, woe to the one who claims to be great as to increase his offspring. Paul presents himself as the father of the children of his new faith, acting like a rabbi. Paul brags about being a rabbi, being an extraordinary rabbi, and it says, when neither apply to him. For how long will they make pledges based upon his significance, becoming burdened by his testimony? His testimony is in the 13 letters that comprise half of the Christian New Testament. His significance is insignificant. That's why he chose the name Paulos. It means lowly and little. That's why Yahusha referred to him as the lowly and little one who leads people away from the Torah.